be it racism, be it sexism, homophobia, ageism, we need to be open to having the discussion about all of those forms of oppression. That's where equity is coming from. We very much believe that that is a very important part of doing the work of dismantling oppression in general, because when we begin to address those various things that we bring to the table from our own backgrounds, we can be much more effective allies for one another for all of those various isms that oppress us. So that's where we're coming from. We'll get more into that a little bit later on, but Equity Institute was basically how it started out for me. It started out, once again, people knowing other people. It started out by a member of the administration, who's the development director, Carol Johnson, who happened to be a former classmate of mine from Morehead State University, and approached me about some of the work that I was doing with other nonprofit agencies and some introductions I helped them. Eventually, later on, when I joined the staff of the Red Cross, I helped make that connection too, and Equity has ranks very high with us at the Minneapolis chapter. And certainly going to take the opportunity to do a quick commercial here. We do have some, what we have here is a newsletter by Equity. One of our newest programs that they're doing is Dismantling Classism, which is talking about money issues and a whole range of other things. Other trainings that they do include Dismantling Anti-Semitism, Dealing with Sexism, Homophobia, and a range of other things. Racism, Dismantling Racism, and then a new one coming up this fall called New Directions in Diversity. In addition to that, I have a public service calendar for their upcoming programs, and they're held throughout the country. Feel free to help yourself after a little bit later on. And that's it for me in terms of general introduction.
I think the other thing I was going to say is that we have a peer material that has to do with sort of information about racism, or information about groups of people, or articles and so forth. But what we're working on, what we've been planning for our nights here or our days here at Holden, is not necessarily the facts and the information, but sort of a better understanding or awareness of our own selves, and then how that affects or how we relate that to working with people that are different than ourselves. I think the other part I was going to talk a little bit about was that what we're hoping to do and why we've become involved. I found a poem that I thought was, I'm a fan of Shel Silverstein, and he seems to do, in a few words, he's able to say things that I can't seem to say, but he's with an impact that I can't have myself. And so I especially thought about this last year when there was the riots in Los Angeles, because I think it's an issue that belongs to all of us. I think that racism or the problems of oppression belong to all of us. And this is the poem that I picked out that sort of gave me a sense of that feeling. And it's called The Prayer of a Selfish Child. And it goes like this. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my toys to break, so none of the other kids can use them. And this is the thing I thought that, you know, that I would rather see us share the toys than have it get wrecked. And I feel that about us as a country or us as a people, that it's important for us to realize that unless we learn to share what is here, that we could have it all broken. For tonight, I was hoping that we would all be able to sort of be able to step out of ourselves or get to know ourselves so that we would be able to see the vantage point from which we come. One of the things another friend of mine gave me, when you're dealing with diversity, people are always sharing something with you, and a friend from work brought this to me, and I thought it was so good I wanted to share this with you also. This was from a book called Letters from China, and it was written by Sarah Pike Conger in 1909. And her husband had been a U.S. representative to China in the late 1890s, and this is what she writes about a visit in South America. Well, in South America, I learned a lesson that is of great help to me here. When I went to Brazil in 1890, I was always comparing and contrasting that country and her people with my country and my people. And to me, mine were always superior. When returning home a year and a half later, I had time on my long journey to review my experiences and look over the thought treasures that I was bearing with me. To my surprise, my treasury was empty. I reflected, seeking the reason for this lack. I soon learned that the attitude of superiority I had taken made it impossible to accumulate anything. When I returned to Brazil, my attitude was changed. I descended from my imaginary height with the determination to seek with open eyes and a willing heart, and I was amply rewarded. So that's kind of my hope for us tonight. Then the other thing, let's take out the handouts that we had for you and more or less talk about a little bit
just
about the...
Just a second. I think that possibly some of you may... We have a much larger group than we had anticipated.
Right.
And so what we're going to have to ask you to do is to share these handouts. The top one is labeled Diversity, Racism, Program Objectives.
So mostly, and I think that the program goals is that if we can heighten this awareness and we can get to a spot where we have a little different attitude or expanded attitude. Yeah.
Has everybody got access to one of the handouts at this point? Okay.
But our goal primarily for this these four sessions that we have in these next 5 days will to work on issues of race and differences in a supportive environment, have an opportunity to develop strategies for dismantling racism and becoming allies with those that are different from themselves. Our objectives will be to take a look at the messages that we have about class and ethnicity, race, gender, age, physical, mental ability, and sexual orientation. Self-assess ways in which unconscious stereotypes operate and affect personal and professional interactions. Examine the interrelatedness of all oppression, the ways by which all human beings are hurt by each ism. Develop and explore strategies to interrupt and stop unconscious oppressive behavior and explore new ways to bridge cultural barriers and big alliances. That's a tall order. We will be just touching on these. Carl will take us a little bit and talk about some of the guidelines for how we plan to work.
Okay, just turn quickly to the second page. And these guidelines are kind of a mixture of things that in terms of how we operate. And the purpose of this is for us to create an atmosphere, an environment in which people feel comfortable and safe about opening themselves up to one another. I think that's we really believe that's very important for us to be able to do this kind of work, that we be able to look inside of ourselves first and be able to do that in a comfortable, safe setting. Now, I should also point out, the first half of this is being taped at this point, and that's where Darlene and I are doing all the talking. We're going to have a group exercise, and a little bit later on, we are going to ask that the tapes be turned off at that point, so that you can feel comfortable and free to openly dialogue. Our guidelines are to listen actively to one another, to what's being said. Maintain confidentiality. This is most important. I can't emphasize that enough. What you hear in this room should not go outside of this room. This is for people to be able to be open with one another. You might want to dialogue with one another within this room, but don't take what one person has said and identify them out without that person's permission. Okay? We want everybody to maintain some respect for one another. We say no zaps. That is not putting people down for things that they might want to share and bring up. Participate fully. We really do value taking some risks and opening yourself up. Stick to the topic, and we'll get into the specifics with the exercise. It's really important that we do that. We say expect some discomfort. We're not here to necessarily make you uncomfortable, but if we are really doing our work, there are going to be some moments of discomfort where we're going to hear some things that are being said that might be uncomfortable to us, or we might, in exploring some things within our past history, that might feel uncomfortable to us. that's part of what the learning process is. If we're going to progress, some of that discomfort does have to come about. But also look at number 8. That doesn't mean we can't have fun. We definitely can. And I think for any of you that have had any time to share with me and Darlene this week, you'll certainly know that we certainly are about that too. Be accepting. Be honest with yourself. I think that's most important for us to do that first. Don't interrupt. Let a person who's sharing some of their ideas get that out fully. And so that you're getting complete ideas, completed sentences. Anything else? Okay. The other thing, turn to the next page. By the way, pay no attention to any numbers you might see on the bottom of this. We certainly have borrowed from a number of resources. I touched on this a little bit earlier when we talked about our working assumptions. These come out of a Equity Institute. By the way, can you all hear me well enough if I'm sitting? Is that okay? It's more comfortable for me too, so I'm going to do that. Our working assumptions about this: oppression is pervasive. It's a part of not only this culture, but it seems to be a part of the human condition and in social interactions. That's a working assumption that we make. It's not our fault as individuals, but we do need to accept the responsibility for our own personal behaviors. Oppression hurts all. Not only the person that is exhibiting the oppressive behavior, the person who's the target, we call, of the oppressive behavior, but also the person empowered. Yeah, did you have a comment?
Can you give me your working definition of oppression?
Okay. I would say oppression is, and I'm going to, there's several definitions, we can both work on this, but oppression is a set of behaviors that basically is targeting another group or a group of individuals based on particular, in some cases, physical characteristics. It's a way of isolating people based on race, gender. There are any number of ways in which oppressive behavior occurs. Now, in saying that, one of the exercises that we're going to do this evening is going to show how this cuts across many different kinds of lines. Throughout every day of our life as individuals, shift from being what is an oppressive form of behavior to what we call an agent of the oppression, to also being a target. How can that work? Go ahead, Darlene.
No, I was going to say, I think the other thing is the part of having power. Where the power lies. I think that oftentimes oppression is institutionalized in that the power lies in certain groups of people, and so that is also a big factor.
Okay.
Any other? This is yeah. Not us being the authority. This is you with your ideas and opinions also.
Part of that would be dominant, subordinate, and then the haves and haves-not.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right. Any other? We do not want you to think that we think we're an authority about this. That this is something where we share what you have. You know, if you've got ideas about it, that's what this is about. It's discussion, not us. It's not a lecture.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Another thing that we do believe that one of our working assumptions is that individuals and organizations can and do grow and change. And that comes about as we do more work on this each day, even though it may be uncomfortable at times, but through that work, that change can come about. And we have seen it happen. And the final working assumption, which is most important to keep in mind, if all of you were to attend, this is a lifelong process. In other words, if you were to attend all 4 of the sessions that we're going to have, it doesn't end there. It's continuous throughout your lives, all of our lives. So that's basically the assumptions that we work from.
I think the other thing is that we, I think that we all have to be comfortable enough so that we can be okay with making mistakes with one another, because we all make mistakes. We all say things that offend one another. We all use words that sometimes are not appropriate words in certain groups. We're always working on what is the language that we should use, and we sometimes get so afraid of our language or so afraid of saying that it almost stops us. And I think that's another part that in this setting, I think that we need to feel that we can say who we are or how we feel, and then if someone else is offended by it, that they can also say, oh, I have trouble with that word, or I have trouble with that terminology. Because the more I have worked with this, I have found that it can be it can have a lot to do with geography. In certain areas, something is acceptable and something isn't. And so we were always having to say, I do not mean to offend you ahead of time, you know, or that if you can help me learn what is offensive to you, that helps me a great deal in learning about it. So take the responsibility of helping that other person if you are being offended also. It works both ways, and to have that dialogue is very helpful.
Part of that also comes, a major part of that comes in terms of building into relationships and trust relationships with one another. And that comes over a period of time. That does not happen overnight. You, with some individuals, with people you get to know over a period of time, you get to know where one another is coming from, and you have a comfortable enough relationship where you can talk through those moments where we call those ouch moments.
I can say to Carl, what's the matter? Am I the wrong color? And, but he knows me well enough to not be offended by that. If I was with somebody else, I would not be able to say that. But because we have this. He knows I love him. Yeah. He is my friend. And so that is, but that's one of those things that love is a matter of acceptance, trust, and forgiveness. That's what it pretty much boils down to. And that's really, no matter what, it becomes those factors. So
maybe there's other things that people would like to add to this part of it, because this is, we are going to do an exercise shortly, and we'll probably have more feelings that might come up.
Should we? Go ahead.
Why don't we go ahead and move right into it? We're going to do a group exercise, and
we need to know how many we are here.
Yeah.
This guy, this is big.
Yeah, we weren't sure how many. We're gonna...
Let's see.
Why don't I explain the exercise first while you're counting? You're going to note that we're going to do an exercise that we call class ethnic backgrounds, and it is in the handout that you have. And we're going to have the only way we can do this, and in some settings we could do this as an entire group, but obviously this is too large. We're going to break you up into smaller groups of three. And what you're going to do is you're going to, within a group, talk about individually what is your class and ethnic background. Darlene and I are going to model this for you so you can begin to get some things that you might want to think about. We're going to ask you to discuss what have been some difficulties for you coming from your class and ethnic background. And then the third thing for you to discuss is what have been sources of strength for you coming from your class and ethnic background. Now, one of the things that I find kind of interesting, particularly those of us in the United States, in American culture, we can talk about race, ethnic things. We're fairly comfortable with that, and I think that that's something that we're going to probably do fairly easily, I hope. I want you to spend some time also thinking about class issues, too, because part of what where we're coming from, too, is that this is another part of us that comes to some of the things that we bring to the table in terms of what may or may not get in the way of forming some healthy relationships with one another. We'll give you some ideas.
The other circle that is behind that also has some of the components that are part of an individual. So that is also what you can use.
Take a look at that and see if there's some other issues.
If you want to talk about who you are, these are components of individuals that they come with. And either one of them will work for you to pull that, aspects of yourself from either one of those sheets.
And those are really good to bring into it if this is important for you. That includes gender, physical characteristics, education, religion, affectional preference, language, family, lifestyles, economic status, okay, to give you some ideas of some things to start thinking about. So, now, the other part of this is that you will, each individual, you're going to be broken into groups of three. Each individual will get 2 minutes to discuss those three questions with the group. Now, at the bottom of the page, under ethnic backgrounds, there's some rules for active listeners. The listener's role is very important here because what you're going to want to do is give that person listen with undivided, supportive, and focused attention. Maintain eye contact. Do you all see where I'm at? Okay. Assist the speaker in staying on time and on task. And we do have a watch up here. We'll stop it at 2 minutes and tell people to switch. Do not dialogue or interrupt with your own comments or stories, but do keep the speaker focused on the questions at hand in the limited time allowed. Sometimes that's kind of a challenge because it's very very comfortable for us when somebody is telling their story for us to relate it to our story. You want to give that person your undivided attention about their story while they're talking. Shall we do a model?
Who's going to keep time for us? You keep
I got the watch, so I get to, you get
okay.
to start.
Okay. All right. I am Swedish. I was raised Lutheran. I grew up on a farm, so I consider myself working class. I identify with being a mother. I have two daughters. I also identify with being a single parent because that's been one of my problem areas. I'm heterosexual. I'm divorced. I'm a human resources director at the American Red Cross. I speak only English, a little bit of Swedish. My economic status was much working class brought up, and then with education was striving to become middle class. And of course that sometimes becomes sort of a conflict within yourself. I live in an apartment.
Difficulties
with my... My difficulties have been that I've had a lot of a lack of diversity would be my difficulty, is that I had a lot of fear of people that were different than myself. Because of growing up in this very Scandinavian community, we were pretty much all alike, and we thought that differences were when Lutherans married Catholics or Norwegians married Swedes. So I a lot of not knowing very much about differences. One of the strengths I feel about it was that it was very stable, and I knew exactly what to expect, and what everything was done a certain way, and I can go back there and I can still go back and see it being done the same way, and I can trust that it'll be there. And it was honest and stable and ethical. I'm really thankful for the ethics that I came from.
Okay. Good. 2 minutes.
Okay, now tell me how to do that.
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out myself. Okay, just press that on the two. You get up to 2 minutes.
I'll press it?
This. Okay. Okay. Strengths. First of all, class, ethnic background, African American. My family's mother and fathers come from Texas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, North Carolina. There is Cherokee on both sides of my family as well, though my cultural identity is firmly in African-American roots. Class background, my father worked for Great Northern Railroad. My father was a nutritionist. I would identify myself as working class within blue-collar working class, very much those types of values, but also I would say within the context of African-American community, because both of my parents worked and because of certain values they had about education, would definitely be considered very middle class as well. Difficulties. I'm going to probably get through this faster than.
No, you got to hurry up.
Oh, I got to hurry up. Difficulties would be the problems of racism towards African-Americans in general and African-American men in particular, assumptions that are made by the larger majority culture that become very limiting and for me as an individual. I find points in which I have conflicts also with other people regarding some conflict because of having certain assumptions about being working class, and there are times on the job and at other places where I find myself in conflict with other people, and I think my feeling is that has to do with some of our differences in values. Okay, strength, I'll go ahead with that one. Strength comes from, I find sources of strength from my family, and the values that they gave me, and also I grew up in the AME church. I don't know how many are familiar with that, but that is also a great amount of strength for me in terms of some of my values that I still carry.
Okay, this is what we want you to do. I think that we will just and rather than counting off, I would like you just to get in groups of three. And then we'll tell you when to start and then who's going to be first. And share in your groups. We prefer that you have somebody you don't know.
Right.
So don't stick with your partner or your spouse or your person that you came with. Get with people that you don't know.
We'll give you about a minute to get organized,
yes.
And then we'll tell you when to start.
Yeah.